just be the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, an English Premier League podcast hosted by three Americans and one Russian-Nigerian international analyst?
International allegiance analyst. But I am American now because there's no international fixtures.
Welcome back, Shay.
Only when there's international fixtures you have
good
to...
Good to have you back.
Okay, so one clarifying question then. Are you allowed to manage the national team, or should we not let you manage the
country?
National team? Of America. The United States men's national team.
I am allowed, but I should not be managing.
Are we still talking about this?
I don't. It's just a question.
All I know, Shay changes nationalities more.
That's not true. That's
Prince
not true at all.
Or more than P. Diddy changes personas, okay?
And no. Okay. I thought you were going to go Snoop Dogg.
Who's P. Diddy? No, Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy.
Sean Daddy Combs.
Puff Daddy.
I think it's just
Diddy
now.
He only went by Diddy or P. Diddy.
Obviously.
It's Diddy now, guys. Just Diddy.
I don't change allegiance. I've been straight with you since day one. I am much Nigerian.
Well, that makes him more like Prince because he ain't.
All right. Anyways, we got way off topic, so let's try and reel it back in already.
The hate's already started, Miles. I might as well take off.
I know. Wow, this is strong. It started strong out the gate.
Speaking of hating, we are coming fresh off the Arsenal-Leicester fixture today, a Monday fixture. Premier League is back. We had a great weekend of fixtures and results. And I have to be the first one to say I've been hating on Arsenal. Miles, you too. And they just came off a pretty convincing 3-1 win over Leicester. So would you like to apologize to Arsenal fans with me or no?
I'm not going to apologize, but I am going to say that, I'm not going to apologize. I don't apologize for that.
It's never too late to
say
sorry.
Early in the season. It's still early in the season, but they did look pretty great today.
Never going to get it. Never going to get it.
Okay.
They look pretty great today.
I know he's never going to get the apology.
They did look good today, and that's Arsenal's 10th win a row, 10th win in a row in 10 fixtures. So,
Arsenal is up plus 2 points from last season. So actually, they're playing about the standard performance.
I'm sorry,
I just saw a stat that said Arsenal's up two points from this point last season.
We've discussed that Arsenal has been great in nearly every first half of every season
over the last
6-7 seasons or so. But I do think, you know, Leicester is a team they've consistently been winning over. I mean, even you look at Leicester's title-winning season, they struggled against Arsenal.
But Leicester also looked good this season, and they haven't looked good in a while, I will say.
Yeah,
they've started
agreed.
Off. This is probably the strongest performance I've seen them start off since their title-winning year.
I mean, one thing is for sure, Arsenal has the best record against teams outside of the top six. I guess Liverpool and Spurs also have Liverpool has all wins against teams outside of the top six, Arsenal as well. But, you know, City, Spurs, Chelsea, Man United have dropped points against other teams in fixtures. Arsenal really have only struggled from a result standpoint against City and Chelsea this season.
Yeah, which were the early two fixtures, right? Or two out of three fixtures.
Well, I only saw the highlights, but one person here has not been hating on Arsenal. That's this guy. Everyone else picked them to drop out of the top four conversation when we just talked last week. I haven't been showing them love by that respect either. But I think we showed today the deadliness of that attack. You know, that second goal where Aubameyang comes off the bench, you know, just what, like after 5 minutes and scores both those goals, that second goal is almost, you know, that goal, that one goal of the season, very reminiscent of that. That 1-2 sharp passing.
The third goal.
The third goal. I mean,
the third goal is beauty.
Very beautiful. It almost seems like that front three, starting with Lacazette there, they found a nice rhythm.
Yeah. Really nice rhythm. You know, both the second and third goal came back-to-back. In the third goal was real build-up after them controlling the game since Aubameyang came on. You know, I know you talked about the flow of play and the style of that play. I think really, though, you know, and Shay was talking about it before the call on his Twitter has talked about it. I mean, Mesut Ozil and his ability on the offensive end to facilitate both those goals, I think, really speaks to his quality. You know, his ball to Bellerin through, I mean, Leicester was set up in a very classic 4-4-2 fashion, basically two lines of defenders, basically, and Ozil finding a pass through four or five players to Bellerin to, for, I mean, Aubameyang had two tap-ins, essentially. It's really Ozil and Lacazette, I think,'s movement that made both of those goals.
And Bellerin's passes, both the passes.
Yeah. Obviously, the service is dependent on that.
But so, yeah. Chris, does that sound like you're apologizing?
I mean, it's not an apology. It's more like I can't sit here and hate on, you know, the combination play. I mean, I thought it was great. Can Arsenal pull that off against the Chelsea, against, you know, a Man City, against the Liverpool consistently? I don't know yet. I'm a little more inclined to say they might be able to in some instances. But, you know, if they can't.
This is the first time that Arsenal team in a while for me, from just the eye test, is so drastically different than what we saw under Wenger. Like, the team is almost unmistakable. The way they're playing, because the squad that they have, it just does not resemble a Wenger team. There's this air of sort of unpredictability for me. I kind of knew when I was watching Arsenal the past, kind of what the general idea was going to be, how the goals were going to be scored. The fluidity, though, in the attack now is much different and not prototypical of what I recognized from the Wenger side before. It's their style of passing, but it's not so obvious.
Are you saying it's the same style of passing?
It's the same style, but
it's
just not obvious.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the same flow of ball. I mean, Arsenal has been doing this for years. That third goal is very reminiscent of how Arsenal scores their, you know, their wonderful goals. Maybe you're saying they're attacking firepower, maybe? They're scoring more goals than they may have under Wenger? I'm not sure. They have better quality in striker, too, so maybe that can account to it. But, maybe.
I mean,
I think they're just very unpredictable. You know, looking at Arsenal this season, I didn't really know what to make of them. And I think, you know, as Jacob said, this is definitely a game changer for me slightly in looking at them in these next fixtures and maybe not doubting them as much. You know, that attack has proven in and out, Lacazette, Aubameyang, and if Ozil's on point, I was practicing it all afternoon.
Round two of practicing, okay.
If Ozil's on point, I mean, that attack looks pretty much unstoppable. So going from the season where, you know, not really knowing what to make of them, this team looks a lot more solidified and dangerous. Like Jacob, I think you nailed it on the head there.
I mean, I do think, I think Jacob makes a good point. I do want to ask, though, I mean, you think this team from a offensive firepower standpoint is, I mean, I would argue that Van Persie's last year at Arsenal, you know, that team and the way they played resembles the style, in my opinion, resembles the power and the ability offensively, you know, that Nasri Van Persie team.
I guess I just can't remember since the title-winning seasons, and you're right, maybe it was that 2013-2014 season where they collapsed from a lead after New Year's. But I just don't remember them having the depth and the variety of strikers in that, what Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan and Lacazette and Ozil provide. It's they're all similar but extremely complementary. They don't have that one focal point in the middle there. You know, there's no Giroud. There's no target man. It's dynamic. You know, Lacazette can play anywhere across the front three. You can put Aubameyang central in a 4-5-1.
I think that's the key. I think that is the key there, is the fact
it's
that.
It's the personnel. What I think Jacob was trying to say is the personnel. Because I don't know if it's fair to credit Emery this much, this early into the season, and say their style of play is that much better, because this is something we've seen. I mean, you and Peter mentioned they always start hot. They have different personnel this time, like I said, and Aubameyang being two elite strikers who can put games away. So maybe they're not so dependent on one player to score or one player to create. Now it's a whole team, you know, pushing forward and being able to be more deadly with the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say this. They've scored, you know, since their first loss, they've scored two or more goals in every single game that they played.
That's pretty damn impressive.
It's impressive, you know, and against the likes of, you know, Watford, who's flying high, Everton, West Ham, who's hit and miss, even against Chelsea. I mean, and Leicester, you can't always score that many goals against these squads. You know, Liverpool pulled out a 1-0 win against Huddersfield, and we always praise their attacking power, you know.
It's well, it's a little different now, but I agree. I mean, but Miles, last week you were the one that said that Arsenal's defense is your biggest concern, and you look at Arsenal's goals against for the season, and they're the worst out of the top five. You know, out of the top challengers in the league at the moment. I mean, they still have allowed fewer goals than Manchester United, but is defense still a problem in your mind and in anyone's mind on this show? For them.
Yeah, I think about it. I mean, come on. They almost gave away a penalty. I mean, arguably, that could have been a penalty against holding. Mustafi, I still think if you put him under pressure, I mean, we saw that last season, Mustafi under pressure is terrible, gives the ball away in terrible circumstances. That defense is still a question for me.
Okay.
Fun fact. You know that in the season after Van Persie left, Theo Walcott was Arsenal's leading goal scorer?
And they paid him.
Guess how many goals he had? Very impressive, actually.
22.
Okay. Yeah, he had 21.
Nice. Yeah. They paid him all that money.
Yeah.
They signed him to a big deal. All right, guys. Last thing. I mean, this we didn't really talk about Leicester at all, but
poor Leicester.
When asked about when Claude Puel was asked about Vardy coming off with the stomach problem, just wanted to mention that he mentioned that he couldn't digest the penalty decision. That was his response.
Digest the penalty decision.
Anyways, guys, moving on. We had Chelsea Manchester United this weekend in a fixture that I think everybody who could wake up that early was watching.
Park the bus, Man United.
Yes, Shay.
Shout out to Shay.
Hey.
So
it was a very exciting game, actually. No.
I thought it was a good game.
Maybe I had fun watching it because I was arguing with Jacob and Rocky the whole game. Well, actually, no, Rocky was on my side, but I thought it was a good game. It was a good, entertaining game. And, of course, there was no spare of drama at the end from Jose Mourinho, but I guess we'll get to that when we get to that. So,
I mean, look, I don't really think there's much to say there. It's a sideshow to cover up from and a distraction from, I think, the performance from both teams. And really, my greatest point of concern after looking at this match is just that United continue to start games slow and struggle in the first half. Newcastle was very similar, and so I'm just wondering how you can, how this can happen. And my only thought is that Mourinho just wants to go out and play a defensive, prototypical Mourinho game that we've come to expect from now, and only when forced into going out and trying to win the game rather than trying to go out and draw the game. Do they produce something excitement and play so much better? I mean, those players need to have the shackles come off, and go forward for the win. I mean, both those last two games, the second halves were just so fast paced. You got to take the reins off Rashford, Martial, Lingard. You got to let them go, be unpredictable, and run at players and do something.
Let the horses run. But I do agree with you, Jacob. I do think putting Mata in that lineup was a positive move from the game against Newcastle. And again, it's insane how Mata, who finds... Hold on. Fuck me. Yeah, it's amazing that Mata, who finds his way out consistently out of the Man United squad season in, season out, when he comes back on the pitch, completely changes the game around.
I mean, but that's always been the case with Mata. I mean, the problem is He's always been stuck playing under Mourinho no matter where he goes. I mean.
Well, he had boys for a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, that's true.
Or Van Gaal.
What an opportunity.
Poor bastard.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you're right.
Let's talk about Martial for a second. I mean, this is a guy who's been really backseat, to Rashford and to Lukaku and to Sanchez. He's had the worst situation out of all these guys. I mean, is there a place for Martial on the team? After seeing performances like this, I mean, we know the type of quality he is. We knew when he signed with Manchester United he'd be a good player. But we've always been fearful of, his ability to play. I mean, fun fact, Shea bet 4 years ago that Martial would be a top three striker in the world by 2022. And, we're still 4 years away from that. Is that still an opportunity, Shea?
He's a quality player. Obviously you see it here. What was the question? It's just like what I'll be just discussing.
What do you make of the Martial situation? I mean, should he be playing in the first team?
Yeah, I mean, I think he offers more than Sanchez does, which is a shame because Sanchez has such a flourishing career, but he offers more. We looked sharp, And maybe this is where Mata plays the most influence, is because we finally have a piece to connect the puzzles. Because Sanchez plays.
Mata's been there longer than.
No, I'm saying, but when Mata actually plays, he connects the puzzle. Because you have Martial, Rashford, who are just straight horses. They run straight into their channels, and they need to score goals by running into their channels. Mata can kind of hold it up and ping it to them, which Pogba doesn't provide. But Martial should be starting on this team. I just don't. With the personnel we have, I just don't know how it will work week in and week out. Because then you're forced to bench Sanchez. Or you're forced to bench
Sanchez.
Or you're forced to bench Lingard. Like, these are all players who, in their own right, should be starting on a Premier League team.
Mm.
It's just tough. It's a tough situation because you have personnel who can win you games, but with the style of play, maybe it doesn't gel with the personnel, and then you have such a bad atmosphere around the club that it's just like everybody starts to look bad. Mm. But I do think
Martial made a statement. Yeah, you know, and that he should be starting.
And you saw him smiling. That's the first time I've seen Martial smile in a very long time. But he shouldn't have been taken out of the game. I disagree with that substitution.
Well, I mean, I think it goes both ways. I mean, we talked about this. There are two philosophies. Either you add additional attackers to put the pressure back on them, or you bring on defensive minded players to soak up the pressure. I kind of agree. Maybe it went a little bit flat after Herrera came in. Maybe you do bring on Bailly, who helps you negate the long throw and maybe clears the ball. But, you know, Matic had an opportunity to get rid of that ball. I don't think the substitutions are so much of an issue so much as...
Why not? I think it is. I think it's a big issue. I mean, Herrera, I don't think it was a problem because he was in well before the goal was scored. I think it's bringing in Sanchez and bringing in Pereira. Are you talking about Pereira?
Well, I mean, just look at the options available. There was no Fred on the bench.
There was Fred on the bench.
Was Fred on the bench?
There was Fred on the bench.
I mean, I don't know that. Yeah.
There was Darmian on the bench, and there was Bailly on the bench. So those three defensive-minded players you can bring in.
No McTominay?
Yeah, I guess my point is, I don't think bringing on defensive players would have done Manchester United Player of the Year. I don't know that there's much that bringing on defensive players would have done, because that gets to my next point. Manchester United's goal differential to this point in the season is -1. Yep. They can't defend full stop, period. So bringing on more defenders to kill off a game may not be the answer. And that is the worry, is that Mourinho is supposed to be able to set up teams defensively, and they're conceding goals like a sieve. I mean, there is no excuse for the first goal, where Pogba just, for whatever reason, can't keep with his man. There's no excuse in the second goal for nobody is following. I mean, any one of us could have waltzed in, except for Kendall, and scored that goal. I mean, it was an open net.
Yeah.
Question.
So those are the larger issues. But I think we should talk about Chelsea. I mean, after this.
Yeah, on that note, just a quick question for Shay. And it's not has Mourinho been sacked? Because the answer is no. My question to Shay is: do you know off the top of your head the last time Man U had a shutout in the league?
A shutout in the league?
Yeah, clean sheet.
Must have been last year at home.
You really think it's been that long? Damn.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, only the 30-way through season. But I mean, I'm sure they had one last year at home.
Burnley, September 2nd. So that's a long time without, I mean, with the best keeper in the world, in air quotes.
Agreed. Although he did make a pretty crazy save. I do want to see, before we transition, one thing Man United did do is neutralize Hazard, who has arguably been one of the most deadly players in the league this year.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Mourinho knows him, but he was played right out of the game. I don't know. Maybe a couple things early on.
I don't know, he was so much played out of the game, but he doesn't have a whole lot of options to distribute the ball to. And that would be my main point about Chelsea. And I think we talked about this year, maybe on the podcast, but if not offline, is just about how we're not seeing the best out of Conte, just because those three midfielders are so similar that he's being forced much further forward into the attack, when I think he's a much better sort of working from the...
against Liverpool, yeah.
You know, driving forward. I mean, he can be box to box, but he's not going to be getting on the end of a lot of sort of crosses in a late trailing run type of manner, or ripping shots from outside the box. So
I'm surprised you didn't play him against £195,000 a week Luke Shaw. Just put him against the ball game.
I agree with you, Jacob. I mean, you know,
and Morata doesn't. And Morata, you know. The guy
That's ridiculous that Morata actually starts a game against Man United. That game is perfect for Giroud.
I would agree.
He's going up against those center backs. He's gonna, you know, flick a ball. He's gonna flick right past him. I do agree that I think Conte should be sitting deeper. I don't know why they've seen something, you know, in him or his desire to move forward. But everyone knows he's probably one of the best, if not one of the best defensive mids in the world right now. And to have him, you know, be going box to box is, I think, like 50% out of his defensive capability.
I disagree. I actually like – I still like him in front of Jorginho. I don't think that is an issue. Jorginho can still facilitate play from where he is. Conte adds another level of pressure higher up the field and allows Chelsea to counter. I think it's a –
To win the ball higher up the field.
And that's what Sarri's been trying to do. I mean, against Man U, it didn't necessarily work, but, you know, I think...
That's a good point.
I still think Conte's developing as an offensive player. I mean, we've seen him get goals in recent weeks. You know, he had a good chance against Man U, actually, that was saved.
That's a good point. He can't create. He's not capable of it. But wouldn't he be much better in a 4-5-1, you know, or
maybe
a 4-2-3-1?
I think it's dependent on the match. I think it's dependent on the matchup.
But
like,
Sarri plays a straight 4-4-3, and I just think, again, that is not the ideal place. I would put either you have to take one of those three has to go. I mean, I can't figure out that team in a 4-3-3 to get the most out of it. But
I do agree that
the fact that they need a better central striker. You know, goal scoring.
I mean, the issue could be Barkley too. I mean, you're playing Barkley with Jorginho and Conte. I mean, there's clearly one player that's not up to snuff here. You know, in the trio.
Where's drink water?
That's a good question.
He's still trying. He's still in London trying to get into clubs,
right?
I think if we, maybe this is, this may not be the right statement, but I think if we look back in the season when the season's over, I think this could be a pivotal game where United could be like, well, we just really blew our chance, and I think the same Chelsea could be like, we snuck one because Chelsea should not have won this game. Obviously, they were good enough too because they tied, but they snuck a point.
Yeah,
they snuck a point in a performance where United really, minus that goal, looked the best they had looked in a long time. And I said this last week that I thought the international break could help in play in their favor because people could just have like a new spirit.
Yeah,
and you know,
we saw some weird results for sure.
Yeah, and Chelsea, know, now can go on to win the Premier League, whatever.
But it's just a missed chance for United. Two wins in a row on the bounce, two comeback wins. Could have been a great feeling. Mourinho gets one over his old team.
Martial wins a game.
Like, Martial was the narrative so close to flipping. Those smiles we saw when he removed him. Mm. And now we're right back to where any match.
It's a terrible feeling. It
could be the one that has him sacked. I mean, I want to look at Man United's next matchups because I think they're sort of interesting. But they have Juventus tomorrow.
Yeah. In the Champions League.
Then Everton, Bournemouth, Man City.
And Juventus
again. Bournemouth are very, very, very strong at home. Everton, you know, on the road, those are no slouches either. I mean, they can pose some serious threats with some of the speed.
What do you think about this Chelsea bench? I'm looking at the fact that I haven't seen Fabregas play this whole season. I haven't. And the fact that Gary Cahill really, the captain of England, former captain of England, is now resort to being a bench player consistently,
Do you think? Yeah, but I think Cahill was out. I think Cahill and Fabregas were both players that were kind of on their way out of the squad last season. I am impressed with the revival of David Luiz. Last season under Conte, he basically did not play, and this season he's been a constant fixture in that back line.
Yeah. That's happened to a couple of players. Remember Victor Moses?
Yeah. Right? Is he injured? He's not. He wasn't.
No,
even
he's
on
just
bench.
Not. He just sorry. Just does not want to play him.
He retired from Nigeria and then he just retired. Period.
He's not. Yeah.
Wonder
he's not
why? All right, guys.
One hit wonder, quite literally.
We're gonna take a quick break. Oh, by the way, we do know what it's like to just lose, a point at the last second. Shay, Jacob, and I lost a pretty bad one this weekend. But we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about Fulham. Our favorite Fulham, what we learned this weekend, and some Champions League stuff. We'll also field some listener questions shortly after the break. Guys, we're back. Guys, I mean, we came back from international break. Shay, you mentioned, the the randomness that comes with international break fixtures, including the car horns over on Miles' side out, out down in BA.
Toot, toot.
What was your biggest takeaway from the weekend? What did you learn? What were you surprised by? I could start.
Yeah, go for it.
I think for me, the biggest thing, and I know NBC seemed to hype it up quite a bit too, but for me, it, and this only happened, and this only made me realize it because Tosin scored this weekend for Everton, but Everton does have quite a bit of offensive depth on the bench. I mean, they're not proven guys, but they do have talent there that they can bring on. I mean, we saw them bring on Calvert-Lewin late in the game. You know, Walcott came off. Richarlison, I mean, they have a lot of different offensive players that they can use. Nias, different players, probably all within the same level. A similar problem Man U has, except Man U's players are at a much higher caliber. But it just made me realize that, like, that Everton team should be beating nearly everyone except teams in the top
six. So you're
six.
Saying they're good, or are they a good
he's
team?
Saying there's a great, you're saying they're a great team. Is that what I mean?
Are you saying they're a good team? Are you saying they're a good
I'm
team,
I'm not
Prince?
Saying they're a great team. And
no,
I'm,
no, you're saying they're a good team?
I'm saying they have good offensive personnel.
Okay.
Well,
I don't think they're a great team.
I can't remember seeing St. Tolson score a goal.
Yeah, I know.
So
it
looked
his second of the season.
Yeah. Is that his... Maybe like his third or fourth since he's been there.
He hasn't
year.
Been good at all.
Well, Sam Allardyce refused to play him because he said, quote, he couldn't play in the cold.
I mean, what, they win like 18-0 this summer in a preseason game?
Yeah. they're good. They're an interesting team. I think I learned more just about how still terrible Crystal Palace is. My biggest takeaway is I feel so bad for Wilfried Zaha.
Same. He looked so defeated after those goals. I mean, he was just like, dear God.
He's sending up an SOS. And even that penalty, I'm not even sure that's a penalty. I'm not entirely sure his feet were taken from him. I think he was kind of laying there hoping it would get given.
That Pickford save was phenomenal, though.
Nice little kick save. But Connor Wickham's back.
Wickham's back. He looked kind of quick in his 6 minutes on the pitch?
Yeah, he's better than the alternative, which is Benteke. And that team is bad.
And you definitely can't put Andros Townsend up top. Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
they're not very good. And then I will just go over to Liverpool briefly and just point out that's a game they won 1-0, which last year I'm sure they would have drawn. We know their record versus relegated teams on their Klopp is rather poor. And notable Mo Salah getting his first goal of the season.
Yeah.
Anything else that we learned, guys?
I think, it seems like this relegation – the bottom of the table relegation was kind of set from the beginning of the season. It's nice to see some of these teams at the bottom, have some fight, like seeing Cardiff with a win, seeing Newcastle lose. I mean, they're sitting at the bottom of the table. That's terrible. I mean, it's interesting. I think it's going to be a fight till the end. I mean, Huddersfield only lost 1-0 against Liverpool.
They could have
it's good that there's a little bit of fight. You know, it's still a little open at the bottom. I thought it was kind of wrapped up.
You just said Newcastle had fight, and then you said it was good to see them.
No. I'm sorry, because
You are sorry, and I accept your apology. Look,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's good to see Newcastle. Like, we all had them higher in the season. I'm saying it's still up in the air. You know, they just lost to Brighton. They're bottom of the table, whereas a couple games ago we thought, at the beginning of the season, thought they were going to do all right.
There's rumors that Rafa might get sacked, which is really a shame to see. But for me, can I move on past Newcastle topic? I think for me, one team that I just can't figure out this season is Southampton, man. I can't figure it out. I think Bournemouth, obviously, has gotten a lot better since last season, and we can see that based on their performance this season compared to last. They're up 10 points, and Eddie Howe, is looking sharper, and his team is looking better than they have from any time that I've watched Bournemouth. So I had them in my prediction league. I was like, that's the one win that's going to be guaranteed. Chris and I have a separate prediction league, and half the people in that league pick Bournemouth to win this game, right? And then Southampton comes out and gets a draw. But then they're getting trashed.
It was 0-0.
Yeah,
it
but still, but that's some, I mean, Bournemouth has looked like a strong attacking team this season. I'm just, it's a team that I can't get a read on. Are they really bad? Are they subpar? Are they just kind of masking behind playing good teams and losing to Chelsea, losing to Liverpool, and therefore they actually are good.
Bournemouth?
No. Southampton.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was going to say it's more on Bournemouth. I mean, Bournemouth has only played one team in the top six. I think they've been playing a lot of bottom-feeding teams. So I'm not necessarily convinced by Bournemouth yet.
No, I agree with you,
I think they have
Chris,
some big wins, but, I mean, wins are big in the league in general, but, I mean, they're going to be playing, I mean, the rest of their 2018 calendar year is tough.
So you're saying their strength of schedule has been low. That's why they're so high in the table.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
They're doing really well this season. They're sixth place.
See, I would actually kind of disagree with you, Shay, in the sense that I have had trouble predicting Bournemouth, getting a read on Bournemouth pretty much every season they've been in the Premier League. Like, they'll blow some teams out, and then they will just get crushed for no reason. You know, like...
no reason. I mean, there's a reason.
No reason. No
like,
reason.
Think, yeah, like, for example, crushed. You think, oh, they're going to play Liverpool. Like, you know, they're going to lose. And then they win, like, 4-3. Or even this season.
Let me give you Bournemouth's November and December. Just in the league. Newcastle, but Man U, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, Wolves, Brighton, Tottenham.
Yeah,
and then Man U on December 30th. So, I mean, they're up against the wall in nearly every week after Fulham this coming weekend.
I just think they're very unpredictable. Okay, they could pull a couple wins out of that. You never know with them.
But what about Southampton? Do you think they're...
Trash.
Are they who
I
we thought they
trash.
Were?
Trash.
They're trash.
Okay. They only have Danny Ings. That's their only saving grace, I really think. That'll be the one thing that gets Southampton out of the whole
season.
That's
one team in the prediction league I have not been able to get right at all.
Any team Mark Hughes is managing, you know, is going to be in fight for relegation. I'll just tell you that.
Mark Hughes said he was, quote, pleased with the performance versus...
Well, they didn't concede. I mean, that's a plus.
They tied a six-man.
But they can't finish either. You know, outside
except
of
for
Ings,
Danny Ings.
That's really it. I mean, you know... They're just, I mean, it's funny. Cardiff this weekend doubled their goal tally for the entire season.
Well, we know why that is.
Newcastle can't.
They're playing Fulham.
Newcastle can't score goals either. Huddersfield can't score goals. It's just whose defense is going to be conspired the worst to try and keep them down?
That's good. I mean, it's got to be Fulham. I mean, let's talk about Fulham, Jacob.
Let's talk about Fulham.
I think Fulham.
They
have enough to stay up, but I believe that the teams going down are going to be Crystal Palace, Huddersfield, Newcastle. Cardiff at least have something. I mean, you know, even the teams that Fulham's lost to, the teams they've gotten blown out from have been from the top of the table. I mean,
Crystal
Arsenal,
Palace.
Man
you think
City.
Crystal Palace is more likely to go down than Fulham is?
Yeah, I do. I do. Because
I don't even know
Fulham
if I can agree with that. I mean...
three goals conceded over the last five games.
I think
per game.
That's crazy.
Per game.
I mean,
yes, their defense is leaky, but they're at least scoring goals. So
leaky is the best way to put it.
But Jacob, Jacob, hear me out though. Fulham hasn't scored.
Fulham have given up
25 goals this season. Yeah, they're the worst by far. They've given up. If you double the amount of goals Crystal Palace give it up, Crystal Palace still get up less goals than Fulham.
Fewer. But,
fewer goals.
But Crystal Palace has only scored five goals. They have no one to score. You can.
Yeah, I agree with Jacob that they have the attacking power in Mitrovic alone to stay up. I agree with you, Jacob. Jacob, I'm on your side.
Yeah,
here.
Scoring goals is the hardest thing to do in the
league. Compared to the rest of
the
bottom teams?
But I don't think it's not like Fulham are like lights out scoring, and I think Mitrovic is still limited to chances. Sure, his shot this weekend
was
phenomenal. Sarri has had some phenomenal goals. Even Sessegnon's
goal have good moments.
Required like an extra effort there to get to score. But Jacob, when they're playing teams that they're competing against and they're letting in that many goals, you know, four goals against Cardiff? I mean,
that's pretty bad. You can't
stay up with that type of record.
Exactly. And there's no doubt that they've been trying to... You know, play that.
Wow, is you all right in there? What's going on?
Does she want to get on the podcast?
Go on. I'm in.
Sorry. There's no doubt in my mind that they're still trying to play the expansive, open football of last season. Very attractive. They do have to get the defensive game a lot more solid. Again, I think the continued challenge seems to be they didn't play Anguissa this weekend. They paid a lot of money for him.
I'm not a fan of Johansson
in there and McDonald, and they are too slow and lumbering. We I mean, I've talked about this at length with Max. I would say he agrees with me. That's Max Cohen of SB Nation, as well as Nate Scott, a Fulham fan and our friend and teammate. He is. They're so open in that midfield that no wonder, not to mention Cyrus Christie can't hold his position. Odoi's out of position.
I mean, Reem.
Of course, Reem.
Okay,
the
biggest offender.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, just break it down for me. Is Fulham, are they posers? Are they posers as in, like, they have the big names, but they're just not a good team? Or are they just in a phase that they can work out of? And I want a commitment now so I know what to expect for the rest of the season from the Fulham watchers. Like,
well, I think we were talking to Nate this weekend, and Nate seemed to intimate that he thought, you know, if Jokanović doesn't turn it around, he would get fired. And I would tend to agree. Again, this isn't offensive struggles. You score the first goal, you should be winning the game against a team like Cardiff. I mean, Cardiff are extremely limited. You have enough talent on that team to be doing better. I don't think they'll go down. I still think that talent will count for a lot. But my guess is that they're going to have to replace the manager with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I can even Big Sam.
David Moyes.
I'll
Big Sam. Oh, Rocky.